This evening I'm reading from Esther chapter 4. I'm going to read here verse 14. Esther chapter 4, reading at verse 14. It says, "For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" This afternoon, this will suffice for our reading and our introduction to our lesson, which is titled, "For Such a Time as This." The book of Esther begins in the third year of the reign of King Ahasuerus, who was the emperor of the Medo-Persian Empire. And a great celebration was taking place in the king's palace, and it lasted for 6 months, and it was a great display of wealth and glory of the king's empire. Well, when it was all over, the king gave a special party for his servants and for his officials, and this party went on for 7 days, and it was quite a party. There was drinking, there was all sorts of revelry, and we also see that the queen also gave a party for all the women of the palace. Well, you see, on the final day of this party, when the king was half drunk, he told 7 of his eunuchs to bring Queen Vashti to him with a royal crown on her head. He wanted the men to see what a beautiful woman he had for a queen. When the king's orders were presented to Vashti, she refused to be put on display. And I would that there were more women like that today, women who refuse to be put on display. They're not ordered by some king to be put on display, but rather they put themselves on display. As we read the other night in 1 Timothy 2, verse 9, "In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, and not with broidered hair or gold or pearls or costly array." Well, you see, Vashti's disobedience infuriated the king. It made him mad. And he began to consult with his lawyers what he should do about this. Well, his lawyers told him that Vashti had not only wronged the king, but she had also wronged every official and citizen of the kingdom. And they said, "Now you listen here. If she gets by with this willful disobedience, women all over this kingdom are going to start disobeying their husbands." And they suggested that the king issue an order that Vashti be banished forever from the presence and that he should choose another queen. Well, the king followed their advice and he sent orders to the provinces that a man should rule his home and assert his authority. So here is Vashti. All she's done has been a virtuous woman, and she is banished from the kingdom forever. Well, let that be a lesson for us tonight. Sometimes when we do the right thing, we are not very popular. Well, not long after all this happened, we see that the king cooled down. And he became upset at the loss of this beautiful queen that he had had. And he realized that he would never be able to see this beautiful woman again. And that also shows us not to be too hasty or not to be too rash in decisions we make. Words you see spoken in anger and haste cannot be taken back. And it could cause us to lose someone that we love in our lives. Well, the king's aides then suggested that they go and they find the most beautiful women in the kingdom and bring them there for the king's pleasure. Agents were appointed to go out and select lovely women for the royal harem. And after these young women went through a series of beauty treatments, the one who pleased the king the most, that would be the one who would be the new queen. Well, there was a Jew at the palace by the name of Mordecai, and he had been captured when Jerusalem was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar and was exiled to Babylon. Now, Mordecai had a lovely and a beautiful young cousin by the name of Esther, and Esther's parents were dead, and he had adopted her into his family, and he had raised Esther as his own daughter. Because of the king's decree, Esther was brought to the king's harem. And when the king saw this beautiful young girl, he was so pleased with her that he placed a royal crown on her head and he declared her to be the queen. And then the king, of course, had another big party and he celebrated this great occasion. Well, one day while on duty, Mordecai heard some of the king's guards plotting an assassination attempt. And Mordecai was able to pass this information on to Esther, and then Esther informed the king, giving Mordecai credit for doing this. And the king started an investigation, And he began to look, and he found these guards were guilty, and he impaled them alive. And all of this was recorded down in the king's history book. Well, not long after this incident, the king appointed a man by the name of Haman. He appointed Haman to be his prime minister. And Haman was the most powerful man in the kingdom. He was the most powerful man in the kingdom next to the king. Well, whenever Haman passed by, all of the officials were supposed to bow down to him by orders of the king. But there was one man that would not bow. Mordecai would not bow. He refused to bow to this man, Haman. Well, the other officials, they began to question all of this. They began to question why Mordecai refused to bow. And finally, they spoke to Haman about this situation, and they wondered if perhaps Mordecai was getting by with this because he was a Jew. Well, you can imagine Haman was furious about this situation, and he decided that it wasn't enough just to get rid of Mordecai. He decided it wasn't enough to kill him in some way. So he began to plan to destroy all the Jews in that kingdom. Well, Haman told the king that there was a race of people in the kingdom who refused to obey the king's law. And he said, now listen here, king, it's in your best interest. It's in your best interest to just get rid of all of these people. And Haman suggested that the king issue a decree that the people would be destroyed. And he even agreed to pay for this expense involved in carrying out the decree. The king agreed, and he confirmed the decision by giving Haman his ring. And then, of course, the king also told Haman just to keep his money that he would take care of. Well, a few weeks later, Haman sent out a message. He sent out a message to all the provinces that the Jews were going to be killed, and their property would be given to those who killed them. Well, when Mordecai learned about this, when he learned what had happened, when he knew what was going on, he tore his clothes and he put on sackcloth and ashes, and he went out into the city and he cried a loud and bitter wail. He stood out outside the palace because no one could enter into the palace with sackcloth and ashes on. And the Jews, of course, they were greatly distressed. They were upset, and they fasted and they wept over this decree that this king had made. When Esther's maids and eunuchs told her about Mordecai, what was going on, she was upset. And she sent him some clothing to replace the sackcloth, but he refused. And Esther had one of her eunuchs to go out and to find out what's going on here, Mordecai. She wanted to find out why Mordecai was so upset. Well, the eunuch went out and got the whole story from Mordecai. And Mordecai gave him a copy of the king's decree. And he had him take this king's decree back to Esther and said that she should go before the king and she should plead the cause for her people. When Esther received the message, she sent the message back to Mordecai. And the message says, now, Mordecai, all the world knows that anyone, whether man or woman, goes into the king's inner court without his summons is due to die unless the king holds out his golden scepter. And she said, and the king has not called me to come to him for more than a month. Well, after receiving Esther's message, Mordecai sent back a reply. He said, do you think that you will escape in the palace when all the other Jews are killed? He said, if you keep quiet at this time, if you keep quiet at a time like this, God will deliver the Jews in some other way, but you and your relatives will die. And what's more, who's to say whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Well, Esther sends back a message. She says, go gather all of the Jews of Shushan and fast for me. Do not drink or eat for 3 days, night or day. And even though it's strictly forbidden, I will go in to see the king, and if I perish, I perish. And Mordecai then did as Esther told him to do. Well, 3 days later, after Esther puts on her royal robe and entered into the kingdom, just beyond the royal hall of the palace, This is where the king sitting up there on his throne. When he saw Esther standing there, he held out his golden scepter and he welcomed Esther to come on in. And the king asked her, "What do you wish? What do you want, Esther? What is your request?" He says, "I will give it to you. I will give it to you even up to half of my kingdom." And Esther replied, "I would like for you and Haman to come to a banquet that I prepared for you today." And the king told his aides to get Haman. So the king and Haman came to this banquet that Esther had prepared. Well, during the wine course, the king said to Esther, once again, now listen, he says, "Now, Esther, tell me what you really want. What do you really want? What do you need, Esther?" He said, "I will give it to you. I will give it to you, even up to half of my kingdom." And then Esther said, "Well, my request is that you and Haman come again to a banquet that I will prepare tomorrow. And then I will tell you what I want." Well, I'll tell you, when Haman left that banquet that day, he was a happy man. He had a pep in his step, you might say. He was, like we might say down in the deep south, he was living in high cotton at that time. He thought everything was great. And as he went through the gate, there was a man there, of course, Mordecai. There Mordecai was standing, and he refused once again to bow. Well, Haman was furious, and he could barely restrain himself until he got home. He got his wife and his friends together, and he began to boast. He began to talk about how he was the greatest man in the kingdom, next to the king. And he told them, he said, "Now, I've also been invited to a banquet. I'm going to be a special guest. I've been invited to a banquet that is going to be the queen and the king and me only. We're going to be at this banquet tomorrow." But then he began to explain and began to complain about Mordecai, about Mordecai's refusal to bow down. And then Haman's wife suggested that he build a gallows. And when he was with the king, he should ask the king to let him hang Mordecai on that gallows. And Haman ordered the gallows to be built. Well, that night the king had trouble sleeping, and he decided that he was going to do a little bit of reading. And he ordered that the historical records of his reign be brought and be read. I heard a preacher say one time that if reading a history book couldn't put a fellow asleep, he didn't know what could. Well, I kind of resent that a little bit, since I'm a history teacher, but nevertheless, you know, maybe it would put some people to sleep. Well, they began to read in these books, and they began to see how Mordecai had exposed this plot to assassinate the king. And the king said, now read that again. Let me see here what that says. And then the king said, "Did we ever do anything to reward that man? Did we ever give him anything?" And the courtiers began to search down through that record book there, and they found that no reward had been given. And then the king said, "Well, we've got to reward that man in some way. We've got to do something for him, for saving my life, for exposing that plot." And the king said, "Who's on duty out there in the outer court?" And it just so happened that Haman had arrived to ask the king to let him kill Mordecai. And the courtiers informed the king that Haman was in the outer court. And the king says, "Let him in." When Haman came in, the king said, "Haman, what should I do to honor a man who truly pleases me?" And oh, I'll tell you what. Haman thought, "Oh, he's wanting to honor me. He's wanting to give me some great honor. You know, after all, I'm supposed to have dinner with him and queen. So he's wanting to give me some honor." So he came up with something real good. He told the king, he said, "You should bring out some royal robes worn by the king himself and let that man wear them. And bring out the king's horse and the royal crown and instruct one of the king's princes to robe that man and lead him through town on the king's horse, wearing the king's robe and wearing the crown, and say, 'This is the way. This is the way the king honors those who truly please him.'" Well, the king said, "That's an excellent idea. That's an excellent idea. Now I want you to hurry on out down there with my robe and my horse, and do just what you said to Mordecai the Jew. Haman was humiliated. He had to put the king's robe on Mordecai, and he had to lead him through the streets, and he had to shout, "This is the way the king honors those who delights in him." Well, after this humiliating episode was over, Haman heads home, and he tells his wife and friends what had happened. Well, if you thought he was going to get any solace from them, if you thought he was going to be comforted by them in any way, then you need to think again. They said, "If Mordecai is a Jew, you'll never succeed in your plan against him. To continue to oppose him would be fatal." And while they were discussing this, the king's messengers arrived, and they arrived to take Haman over to the banquet that had been prepared by the queen. Well, the king and Haman arrive at the banquet. And again, during the wine course, the king asked Esther, now he really must have loved her. He said, "What is your petition? I will give it to you, even half of my kingdom." And at last, Esther makes her wishes known. She says, "If I have won your favor, and if it please you, save my life and the lives of my people. For I and my people have been sold to those who would destroy us. We are doomed to destruction and slaughter. If only we were to be sold as slaves, perhaps I could remain silent, even though this would cause great damage to the king." Well, the king then says, "What are you talking about? What are you telling here? Who would dare touch you, my queen Esther?" And then Esther turns around there and she points a finger and she said, Haman, this is our enemy." Well, then Haman grew pale with fright before the king and before Esther. And the king jumped up to his feet. He's mad. And he went out into the palace garden. And then Haman, he's trying to explain things here. He's trying to make amends for some things. And he stood up and he began to plead for his life before Esther. And in his despair, he fell on the couch where Esther was reclining, just as the king came in returning from the garden. And the king said, "Will he force himself on the queen right here before my eyes?" And immediately the death veil was placed over Haman's face. And one of the king's aides informed him that Haman had ordered a gallows for Mordecai to be hanged on. And the king said, "Hang Haman on the gallows." And the people of God were spared because Esther took advantage of an opportunity for which she had come to the kingdom. It is very likely that in this whole episode that Esther was tempted to remain silent when it was necessary to speak up to save her people. We may often wonder why we sin by saying things we should not say. But how often do we sin when we remain silent? To remain silent about error is to participate in it. There is a silence that is sinful. Listen now and pay attention to Leviticus 5 verse 1. "And if a soul sin and hear the voice of swearing and is a witness, whether he have seen or known of it, if he do not utter it, then shall he bear his iniquity." It may be a great cause that is in danger. Those for and opposed may be evilly divided. And there's one strong man, who if he had the courage to speak, could turn the fortunes of the day. People believe in him. People are waiting to hear what he has to say. But he remains silent. He lets a golden opportunity pass, and the cause of truth is retarded for years for lack of words that could have been spoken. Many reasons are given for silence. Some do not speak because they are afraid. Some don't speak up because they are indifferent. Others are cynics. Some might believe that plain, uncompromising speech might alienate or injure his reputation. But It may be by the providence of God that one is brought to the kingdom for such a time. I know of times in our own brotherhood when problems could have been avoided had one man spoken up, had one man said something. Sometimes there are things we fail to say. Sometimes we leave kind words unspoken. The apostle says in Ephesians 4, verse 32, "And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." You know, a kind word to someone can do a remarkable thing. Some people also fail to stand up for the truth because of sake of popularity. It might have been easy for Esther to remain silent. She had been told of her people and their plight, but she feared if she spoke, her own position might be in danger. Some Christians are aware that evil should be denounced, but yet they simply remain silent. They remain silent in order to keep the peace. We know that Peter let an opportunity to speak up for the Lord pass by. He could have stood up for Christ. He could have said, "Yes, that's my Lord. Yes, I'm a follower of His." But yet, instead, he denied him three times. Many of the chief priests and rulers of that day, they would not confess Christ because, what? Because they loved the praise of men. Well, as followers of Jesus Christ, you and I must have the courage to obey, the courage to speak as Esther did long ago. Courage is a quality of mind or spirit that enables us to face dangers and obstacles and challenges of life with fearlessness, with calmness, and also firmness. Listen, people, it takes courage. It takes courage to obey God. God's providential hand was at work, and He used this young woman by the name of Esther to save His people. One of the ways that God molds us in the image of His Son is to allow situations to come into our life that challenge our faith and test our obedience. Esther was up to the challenge. And I want to ask you tonight, are you up to the challenge? You may be facing a tremendous challenge on your job. You may be having difficulties in your family. You may be having difficulties in your relationship with someone, maybe even your relationship with Christ or God. And you may be thinking about giving up. You may be thinking about, why don't I just walk away from all of this? But who knows? Who knows whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Who knows whether or not that problem that has come into your life was not put there so that you could help someone else who goes through the same problem somewhere down the line? God wants us to face the challenges of life with a sureness and a trust in Him and in His ability. The nation of Israel is a fitting example of how God works in the lives of people. You remember after the Exodus, Moses led the people right up to the edge of the promised land. And there were 12 men who were chosen to go into that land and bring back a report about what that land is all about. Bring back a report telling us about the inhabitants of that land. And most of the spies reported that, oh, if we go over there, we're going to meet strong opposition. But there were two, Joshua and Caleb. They remained convinced that God would give them the victory. God had pledged that land to them, but the Israelites wavered. They weren't sure. They were afraid to go in. Their focus blurred at the thought of the battle, and their strength failed because they looked at the circumstances more than God's ability. You see, fear gained a great victory on that day, and they let a tremendous opportunity passed by. Israel refused to enter into that promised land. Fear overcame their hearts and they rebelled against Moses. There they stood. There they stood right on the threshold of victory. But they sank back. They failed to meet the challenge. Their only responsibility was to go in and take what God had given them. But they were disobedient. And they didn't take that necessary step. Their consequences, the consequences of their decision, was devastating. Because every man over the age of 20, except for Joshua and Caleb, died out there wandering in that wilderness. They were not allowed to go into the promised land. The challenges that you and I face in life are not always easy. Often they're difficult because they require something from us. In Israel's case, it was obedience to God's call. Many times the nature of God's command is set for one purpose, to stretch our faith as we place our trust in Him. And listen, people, you never lose by obeying God, and you never win when you disobey Him. The key to an overcoming faith is found as God addressed the people through His servant Joshua in Joshua 1, verses 3 through 9. Here it says that God said, I promised Moses, he's talking to Joshua, he says, I promised Moses I would give you this land. So I will give you every place you go into this land. And all this land from the desert in the south to Lebanon in the north, will be yours. All the land from the great river Euphrates in the east to the Mediterranean Sea in the west will be yours. This includes the land of the Hittites. And just as I was with Moses, I will be with you also, Joshua. No one will be able to stop you all of your life. I will not leave you. I will not leave you alone. He said, Joshua, you be strong. Joshua, you be brave. You must lead these people, he says, so they can take this land. This land I promised their fathers I would give them. He said, be strong, be brave. Be sure to obey all the teachings my servant Moses gave you. He says, if you follow them exactly, you'll be successful in everything you do. He said, always remember what's written in the book of the teachings. Study it day and night. And then you'll be sure to obey everything that is written there. And he says, if you do this, you'll be wise and you'll be successful in everything. And he said, remember that I commanded you to be strong and brave. So Joshua, do not be afraid. The Lord your God is with you everywhere you go. The secret to their ability to meet the challenge was learning to focus on God and His Word. The inhabitants of that land were still bitter enemies, just as they had been long ago. They were still as strong and as vicious as they had been 40 years before. What was different this time? This time, this time, God's people refused to give in to fear, and they crossed over into the Jordan. They crossed over the Jordan to gain the inheritance that God had given them. Now I'm telling you tonight, if you're willing to allow God to work in your life, as Esther did in hers, He will give you strength to face difficulties boldly, calmly, and victoriously. But if you only focus on the problem, you'll begin to ask questions. You'll begin to have doubts. You'll begin to say, can I do this? What happens if I fail when I'm trying to do this? You'll begin to say, will I be able to make it through this? When we realize the full scope of the challenge that faced Israel, we recognize their deep need for faith in God. And I want to ask you tonight, what impasse are you facing in your own life? Whatever impasse you're facing in your life, whatever trouble you are dealing with in your life, remember, human wisdom is not the answer. No, human wisdom is not the answer. God alone can guide you safely through the trials if you will commit to Him and you will put your trust in His word and in His ability. Mordecai was evidently acquainted with Israel's history. And by the way, let's not forget that Mordecai is a hero in this story too. Many times God's people have been delivered. And Mordecai knew. He was sure that some way, somehow, they would be delivered this time. There's great encouragement in Mordecai's statement. Remember that somehow, some way, God's work will be done. God's work in our lives will be accomplished if we have the courage to take His word and study it and obey it and put it into our hearts and meditate on it and recall His promises and follow Him in obedience. Mordecai saw the needs of the present, but he saw more. He believed that there was an overruling providence. And I don't know all about the providence of God, but I believe it's there. In the beginning, he might have thought it was strange. He might have thought it was strange that his young Jewish cousin, a girl, was now up there on the throne. And she was now the queen. But he could understand now. He knew why that happened now. One higher than that king had put the crown on Esther's head. One who does nothing without a purpose. She had come to the kingdom for such a time as this. And I want you to know tonight that God has a purpose for you in His kingdom. He has a purpose for me in His kingdom. And that purpose may be far greater than we could ever imagine. Whatever challenge we are facing is not beyond His power. And though our circumstances may seem enormous, remember, God is in control. God is in control. Perhaps tonight you're searching for your purpose. Perhaps tonight you've grown weary in your struggle. I want to tell you tonight, don't give up. Don't give up. Focus your heart on God and seek God in prayer. Seek Him in His word. And often the struggles that we face are meant to dig out pride's root and expose us to the forgiveness and the grace of God. And whatever purpose God has for us can only be gained by following His lead. No one can take that first step for us. We have to take it ourselves. You know, there were probably many times in the beginning that David felt like giving up. You know, especially when it appeared that his life was going to be taken by Saul. But God had a purpose for David. He had been anointed king, but yet at this time he had no kingdom. But David never gave up. Even when forced to live among his enemies, David remained true to his commitment. He looked beyond the strife, he looked beyond the troubles, and he saw God's purpose. God saw David's heart and deeds, and He anointed him king. Blessings never come because of human striving. They come because of being obedient to God. That's where the blessings come from. They come from having an obedient heart. And David allowed God to mold and shape his heart. And David did not lose sight of the goal that God had set before him. David had been called to the kingdom to be a king. The kingly side of David was not formed in a month or even a year. David became what he was by overcoming obstacles that were faced before him. He overcame these things to pursue and to know God. Do you know what your potential is tonight? Your potential is limitless when you have God in your life, when you're trusting Him, when you're turning it all over to Him. Obey and trust God. And allow Him to take you to great places in the kingdom. Life is an opportunity. It is coming to the kingdom, so to speak. And it is important that we get rid of any hindrances in our way. Get rid of those sins that you have in your life. Get them out of the way. Do away with them. Make sure you don't participate in them. Get out of the world. Get out of the things that this world offers to you. And put yourself in the kingdom. Put yourself where you ought to be. There is nothing greater for one to do than to discharge his present duty. To the person who makes use of his opportunities, more opportunities will be given. And God opens a door favorable through favorable circumstances. When he does that, our hearts should be prepared to examine and inspect the opportunities, always looking steadfastly to Christ for his approval. Long ago, Mordecai spoke those immortal words to Esther. He says, "Who knoweth? Who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" And tonight, who knows? Who knows whether or not you aren't come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Take your place in the kingdom. Take advantage of the opportunities that you are given. Because you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. If there be someone here tonight who has not obeyed the gospel, you have a great opportunity. You have a wonderful opportunity. You have a wonderful opportunity to put your place in a garden where you can serve God. And you can be forgiven of your sins by believing in Jesus Christ, by repenting of your sins, turning away from them, and confessing that wonderful name of Jesus Christ and being baptized for the remission of sins. If you've got some sin of a public nature that you need to make right, get where you're supposed to be. Get rid of it. Ask for forgiveness. Get in the kingdom where you ought to be. Get back to your place. And if we want to be the case, we ask you to come while we stand and sing a song.